I'm Bruce Glenn. Yesterday afternoon, we were kept quite literally in the dark by the scientists. Except for the flickering shadows on the wall of the cave. Last evening, which as every Swedenborgian knows, is a stage intermediate between decline and renewal, we heard about enlightenment. And this morning, appropriately, in the full brightness of the morning state, in which I'm sure we all are, we turn very appropriately to the topic of religion in relation to Swedenborg. Our first speaker is Michael Stanley.
I'm going to be talking this morning about the illusions of the ego, or the proprium, as understood by Swedenborg, and in relation to Hindu philosophy and the new spiritual psychologies and philosophies that are arising today in the New Age, very much influenced by ancient teaching of the East. In the beginning, there is the garden called Eden. In this garden, there are two trees planted by God. The fruit of one gives life, and the fruit of the other gives spiritual death. According to Swedenborg's insight, the first tree represents man's intuition of life as it really is. The other tree is our perception of life only as it appears to be, to our physical senses rather than to our inner intuitive knowing. So right from the beginning, man has been faced with a dichotomy between reality and appearance and the problem of knowing how to distinguish between the two. Is what we see of the world and man's nature really true, or only an illusion? This question lies at the heart of much Eastern religion and philosophy, and in this particular area, many of the new spiritual psychologies and philosophies springing up in our own century are clearly influenced by Eastern approaches to the subject, not to mention the quasi-mystical concepts arising out of the new physics. There is much talk today of man's ego and how it distorts reality and our wise response to it. So much so that many today would have us destroy the ego and undergo an ego death. Increasingly, the question of ego, what it is and how to deal with it, is coming to the fore. To Swedenborg, the key to the answer lies in the little phrase, as if, to which he returns again and again, making it central to his formulation of a faith for the new church. To what extent does Swedenborg's teaching in this area agree with that of more ancient teaching and that of modern proponents today in both the psychological and spiritual spheres? To what extent is Swedenborg's teaching a contribution to this very deep and very fundamental area of spiritual life? I shall begin by referring to what Swedenborg regards as fundamental reality. Quote, "The divine truth is the one only reality." Unquote. Since the divine truth is infinite and man's mind only finite, we see immediately that man is in difficulty over ever being able to comprehend the one only reality. Whatever man understands of life, therefore, must partake to some extent of what is unreal, or if you prefer, less real than the one only reality. Quote, "Everything that perishes and comes to nothing is inwardly in itself nothing. that which remains to eternity is in itself something perpetually, thus everything, and it also is, for it does not cease to be. Unquote. Any reality, Swedenborg realized, in any created form, must come from that which is within the created form, which in itself never ceases to be, so that created forms are given subsistence only so far as they are perpetually coming forth or being manifested from that which is eternal, or very reality itself. Quote, a continuing in existence is a perpetual coming into existence, unquote. This means that all created forms remain in existence only so long as they are, moment by moment, emerging out of the infinite source. Quote from the Gospels, without me, you can do nothing, declares the Christ. There is then only one life, only one reality. All else are forms manifesting aspects of that one life and emerging from that one source. Who am I, then? Can I have any reality separate or distinct from God? Am I simply a part of God, a facet of the one divine life? Has God anyone to love but his own reflections, like a woman admiring herself in a mirror? Much Hindu philosophy, like Swedenborg, takes the line that anything that changes or lacks permanence cannot be said to be really real. When we look at any created form, we see change. And what is it if we were to be stripped, or if it were to be stripped of its ever-changing forms or qualities? And in particular, when we look into ourselves, what do we find but changing images, thoughts, ideas, and feelings? Therefore, any real self cannot be any of these, but must be something deeper, that has permanence, even when I am asleep and not dreaming, for example. My real inmost self, which is called Atman in Hindu philosophy, is not thought, sensation, feeling, or drive, but some higher power that enables me to do such things. And of that power, I cannot be directly conscious. The central reiterated teaching of the Hindu Upanishad scriptures is that my true or higher self, Atman, is identical with the creator of all forms, called Brahman. Atman is Brahman, declare the Hindu Upanishads. The appearance I have of being a separate, isolated individual is only an illusion. The appearance is not the reality. This apparent self, made up of my thoughts, feelings, desires, etc., is termed by Swedenborg the proprium, and this it is which cannot see reality, life as it really is. Quote, again from Swedenborg, whatever comes from the divine, that is, from the Lord, is real, because it comes from the very being of things and from essential life. But whatever comes from a spirit's proprium is unreal, because it does not come from the being of things nor from essential life. Unquote. Swedenborg defines what he means by proprium as follows. Quote, by proprium, no one understands anything else than that he lives from himself and consequently thinks and wills from himself. It does not consist in being a receptacle of this or that kind. Unquote. For The proprium is not a thing at all, but rather it is the state of perceiving or experiencing life as if it belonged to oneself alone, which in reality is not the case. At this point, I should make clear that Swedenborg's use of the term proprium to indicate man's experience of fundamental independence is extremely close to the modern psychological use of the term ego. Following Swedenborg's general practice of avoiding coining new terms when he could make use of current ones, I shall usually, from now on, except in quoting Swedenborg, use for proprium the currently meaningful term ego, defining it as my experience or experiential awareness that I have an individual self which belongs to me alone, quite independently of anyone else, particularly God. Swedenborg agrees with the Hindu view that although man has the ego experience, he cannot be said to actually have a thing called an ego. As opposed to the true soul itself, ego is essentially unreal. My self, as I feel and experience it to exist, is an illusion. As Swedenborg puts it, there is not anything proper to man, but it appears to him as if there were. Man has not any proprium of his own. No man, in fact, has any proprium in the sense in which this is commonly understood. It is absurd and insane to believe that man is life from himself. Unquote. For Swedenborg, it is the four categories or appearances of space, time, materiality, and individualized personality which mask or veil over the one divine reality. In the angelic state, one transcends these limiting appearances and experiences the universal oneness of eternity. In the Garden of Eden parable, the egoic or proprial awareness is represented by the rib bone taken from Adam whilst he slept, and which was fashioned into the beautiful woman Eve. The image of sleep is used to indicate our spiritual condition when we view life through our ego's eyes rather than through the eyes of the divine within. Quote, a deep sleep is used to mean that state into which man was brought so that he might seem to himself to have a proprium. The state of a person when caught up in the proprium, that is, when he imagines that he lives from himself, is compared to a deep sleep. Unquote. Being caught up in proprium means, according to Swedenborg, believing that all the good and all the evil we desire, think, and do originate in ourselves, which is how it always appears to us in our natural experience of life. We only seem to have an ego, that is, an independent life of our own. But in reality, says Swedenborg, man is only a recipient of good and truth from the Lord and of evil and falsity from hell. Unquote. So what is man's true or real self? An influential branch of Hindu philosophy sees the true self as lying deeper than all normal consciousness and being identical with the one creative divine within every created form. Atman is Brahman. The danger here is of taking this to mean that deep within oneself, everyone is God himself, so that one could declare that essentially, I am God. Some of the New Age philosophies take this stance, and even some of Swedenborg's statements, such as the following, could appear to lead to the same conclusion. Quote, "The internal man of the angels, insofar as their own things do not hinder, is the Lord." Unquote. In other words, everyone has a deep inner level of his being, the internal, which is the Lord in him. But Swedenborg is careful to point out that man's internal does not belong to man. It is the Lord's alone. One of the ways that Swedenborg helps us to avoid the pitfall of identifying with God is by distinguishing between the divine as he is, as God himself, the divine in itself, Swedenborg's term, and his divine as he sees it reflected back to him in the forms of life he creates, the divine from itself, Swedenborg's term. Thus, it appears as if man, as regards his pure internal degree, is divine. But in reality, man is like a mirror, merely reflecting an image of divinity back to the divine itself. Quote from Swedenborg, "The infinite and eternal in itself cannot but regard what is infinite and eternal from itself in finite things. This is to regard the divine, that is himself, in these as a man regards an image of himself in a mirror. The divine in itself is in the Lord, but the divine from itself is the divine from the Lord in created things." Unquote. So man appears to have life in himself, which if he did in actuality would make him God, that is, one who has life in himself. But in reality, man of himself is a dead receptacle containing life itself, and potentially able to mirror that life itself or divinity. What is this receptacle that man is said to be? Here, Swedenborg contributes a very powerful image of how the infinite divine lies within very limited created forms. It is that from which the divine has withdrawn all life in itself by turning it in upon itself. Swedenborg gave us this perceptive truth early on in his work entitled The Principia, which outlines his philosophy of material creation. In this, he shows how infinite energy is finited by degrees by turning in on itself, till at length the totally interned inert atom is reached. The inert atom of materiality is dead, and yet it contains the infinite energy from which it is perpetually emerging. It is no more than an impermanent or transient form or pattern, temporally emerging within or out of the universal flux of energy. Quote, "What is divine is exquisitely separated by the Lord from the proprium of man and is elevated above it and never immersed in it." Unquote. So man is analogous to the inert atom of materiality, which is a form dead or lifeless in itself, and yet which is being perpetually created from an infinitely energetic, creative source. Thus, the dead, finite form contains within it the infinite source from which it emerges without ever being identified with it. Swedenborg also agrees with Hindu philosophy that the ego is the origin of all illusion or fallacy called Maya. Note that in most schools of Hindu philosophy, Maya does not mean that the external world is illusory in the sense of having no existence, but that the way in which the ego sees it and understands it is fallacious. When persons are in the ego state or proprium, they do not see anything as it really is. For then, says Swedenborg, things that are evil they see as good, and things that are good as evil, things that are false as true, and things that are true as falsities, realities they imagine to be nothing, and things that are nothing they imagine to be everything. Unquote. The ego believes in what it sees and what it senses with the physical senses. Yet what they outwardly reveal is not what is real, for as Swedenborg puts it, sensuous things and those which by their means enter immediately into the thought are fallacious, and all the fallacies which prevail in man are from this source. Unquote. Swedenborg then is not saying that there is no real external world. What he is saying is that how we see and interpret the external world through our physical senses is necessarily fallacious or illusory. The reality of the external world is of a lower order than that of the spiritual world, which is its essence or cause, and which itself is of a lower order than the very reality of God as he is in himself. Objects seen spatially and temporally are dead and unreal compared to the more real spiritual things that can be seen within them by the opened spiritual eye. And even what the spiritual or angelic eye sees is relatively unreal or only an appearance compared to what the divine itself or God sees. In this way, Swedenborg clarifies and makes more understandable and acceptable the Eastern doctrine of illusion or Maya. Now, since God, the only life, is good, the question arises, where does evil originate from? The simple answer is man. But what do we mean by this? The Lord creates in man the sensual faculty and senses which lead to a fallacious or illusory view of reality. This is Eden's tree of the knowledge of good and evil. What the Lord does not do is to cause man to believe that the illusions of the senses are in fact reality. Adam does not have to eat the fruit of the forbidden tree. But once man does, Swedenborg shows from the Genesis story how the whole Pandora's box of evils emerge as Adam and Eve exhibit in succession a sense of being separated from God, a sense of shame, guilt, fear, and cover-up or defense mechanism, and projection of blame onto others. In this way, it is made clear by Swedenborg how the original evils arise out of illusory beliefs, resulting in negative inner states from which all our outer evils of behavior develop. As Swedenborg puts it, evils themselves arise out of what is false. If man induces on himself the belief that he wills, thinks, and thence does good from himself and not from the Lord, though in all appearance as from himself, he then turns good with him into evil, and thus makes in himself the origin of evil. Unquote. This is important. According to Swedenborg, the origin of evil is a false notion. The belief that the ego's illusion of independence or separateness from God is reality. But this separateness of fallen man is true only of how man sees himself when considering himself and God from his outer man, subject to the ego illusion. Internally, viewed from the higher reality of the spiritual degree, man must perceive himself ever and eternally one with his Creator. For, says Swedenborg, the internal does not have within it anything that is man's own, but only the external. Within the internal, there are goods and truths, and when these are seemingly present no longer, he is in that case an external, that is, a bodily-minded person. Unquote. In other words, man is then sunk in his ego or proprium, which he is allowing to blind him to the reality of his inner oneness with God. This teaching of Swedenborg's beautifully clarifies the Hindu insight that Atman is Brahman. But Swedenborg does not leave it there. He employs another very powerful spiritual image or metaphor for the origin of evil, which has a somewhat more Western ring to it. Quote, the origin of evil was that man turned himself backwards, away from the Lord, and round towards himself. Unquote. A man or an angel who is turned towards the Lord is one who sees the Lord and the Lord's interests in everything and everyone. A man who is turned away from the Lord and turned towards himself is one who sees his own shadow or his own interest in everything and everyone. In such a state of ego or proprium, everything a man thinks or wills or does, no matter how good an appearance it takes on, is clearly self-centered, which is the essential nature of evil. In that sense, when in ego, man can be in nothing but evil. So, in one of Swedenborg's strong statements, nothing evil and false ever manifests which is not proprium and from proprium. For the proprium of man is evil itself, whence man is nothing but evil and falsity. Unquote. That is, man of himself as to his illusory ego. So, Swedenborg presents the essential paradox of man in his two different aspects, eternally angelic and one with his Creator as regards his internal, which is not his, and nothing but self-centeredness and delusion as regards his ego, which is merely the illusion or sense of separateness and independence of God. Thus, Swedenborg balances the Eastern stress on essential oneness with God and the Western stress on man's essential fallen or evil nature. Neglect of one or the other has and still does lead to grave spiritual errors. Now I'd like to turn to the subject of man's salvation. Clearly, one way of viewing man's salvation from his fallen condition is as a reversal of the step taken in the fall. Illusion is to be seen and acknowledged as merely illusion. One does not really have an ego or proprium at all, only the appearance of one. For, as Swedenborg declares, the Lord alone has proprium. Man's proprium is dead. That is, nobody possesses any life from himself. In believing that he does live from himself, he takes to himself everything evil and false, which he would never do if what he believed and what is actually the case were in agreement. Unquote. Does this mean that man is to endeavor to enter an egoless state in which his former sense of separation from God disappears? Such is one typical Eastern view. But according to Swedenborg, the ego appearance cannot ever disappear, but should instead become transformed into what he calls a heavenly proprium, or heavenly proprial awareness. Quote, to angel or man, while he lives in mutual love, the Lord gives a heavenly proprium, so that it appears to him no otherwise than that he does good of himself. Hence the internal man is predicated of man as if it were his. Unquote. So the illusion of independence must remain for man to be man, but the illusion must be seen for what it is, mere illusion. Swedenborg goes on to counter the notion prevalent in much current spiritual teaching influenced by the East, that the ego is to be actually annihilated. Swedenborg describes the goal of man's spiritual salvation as a heavenly marriage based within the ego itself. Quote, the heavenly marriage is such that heaven and the church are united to the Lord through proprium, insomuch that it is in the proprium, for without proprium there is no union. And when the Lord insinuates innocence, peace, and good into this proprium, it then still appears as proprium, but heavenly and most happy. Unquote. In the biblical Eden myth, Eve, formed from Adam's rib, corresponds to the dead proprium caused by God to look alive and beautiful. She is paradoxically both the originator of evil and, as we are told, her name means she is also the mother of all living, that is, the church. For, speaking of Eve as the vivified proprium, Swedenborg writes, the proprium vivified by the Lord is called his bride and wife. Unquote. Thus, Swedenborg insightfully maintains the paradox that on the one hand, the ego's illusion, believed in, is the origin of evil, whilst on the other, its illusory nature and the illusions it gives rise to are the necessary crux
of the Lord's union with man or angel, the purpose for which man has been created. Also, it is clear from Swedenborg's exposition of the Eden myth that the tree of knowledge planted by God himself is not to be uprooted and destroyed, but is to be moved back again to the sides of the garden, away from the center where it had displaced the tree of life, which symbolizes man's intuition of reality. Also, Swedenborg's teaching reveals how, on the one hand, Jesus' pre-resurrection material body of flesh and bones, derived from his mother, represents his corporeal proprium, which is of fallen nature, whilst on the other hand, his post-resurrection body of flesh and bones, unlike any spirit, represents his divine proprium upon which we symbolically feed. So the proprium is to die only to its old form of illusion believed to be reality, and its form of self-centeredness or independence from God. And it is to be resurrected in its heavenly or divine form as the reality of the Lord's own goodness in regenerated man. Salvation is also described by Swedenborg as a reversal of the turn man made away from God to himself in the fall. Such a reversal of the spirit is termed in the Greek metanoia, and in English, repentance. Swedenborg describes it as looking to the Lord, for, quote, God is the all in all things of the universe, unquote. That is, as Swedenborg explains, the angels see only divine and heavenly things within visible forms, not themselves or their egos' illusions. What is the divine purpose in creating man's ego? Eastern philosophy has not proved as good at finding reasons for why things are as they are as it has at perceiving or intuiting how things really are. In particular, it fails to answer the question, why has God given us senses which inevitably present a fallacious or illusory picture of things? To Swedenborg, the why is important as well as the how, and he supplies the answer to the ego question in terms of the nature of the Lord himself as follows, quote, the Lord desires to be loved by man as if it were from man himself. Thus the Lord dwells with him in what is his own, the Lord's own, which he has given to him for the sake of this end, that he may be loved in return. For the divine love consists in this, that it desires that what belongs to itself should belong to man. And this would not be the case unless man felt and perceived that what is from the Lord is, as it were, his own. Unquote. Both Eastern and Western religions have tended to present the future, redeemed, regenerate state of man as a kind of static, egoless blessedness, termed Ananda or Nirvana. Swedenborg differs in stressing clearly the ever-ongoing cyclic states of the angels, mirrored in the appearance of day and evening and summer and winter cycles. These are alternate entrances into more natural and more heavenly proprial conditions, an alternate drawing away from and nearer to the divine reality, a spiritual vibration that is eternal, ever ongoing. Swedenborg points out that the value of this endless vibrational phenomenon is the renewing and intensifying of the humble condition of the angels, in which they can truly acknowledge again and with ever deeper realization that of themselves, of their illusory ego, they are nothing but evil, and that all the wonderful and beautiful good in them and that issues from them is coming from the Lord alone within them. Since Swedenborg's day, there have arisen several new spiritual philosophies and psychologies which hinge in a crucial way on the relation of man to his ego and true or higher self. In particular, there have been a number of unorthodox but influential Christian philosophies and movements in America linked under the general label of New Thought, which have arisen in the 19th century fairly directly out of strong interest in Swedenborg's teachings. These philosophies have stressed the God within man as a potential power for spiritual health and development, in sharp contrast to the orthodox line of Christian thought stemming from Augustine and Luther, which labors the notion of man's essential evil and depravity and inability to do anything truly good. The direct influence of Swedenborg's teaching on New Thought, principally through Quimby and W.F. Evans, is not in doubt. In the field of psychology, though, his influence appears less direct than that of Eastern psychology, coming principally through Jung and Buddhism. Jung's concept of man's true self is as a God image, which shows strong resemblances to Swedenborg's image of the spiritual sun, for the governing source and presence of the divine at the center of the human soul. Jung saw this God image, or true self, as the source of all psychological healing and wholeness when it is rightly approached and related to. Following Jung, humanistic and transpersonal psychology, sometimes referred to as the third force in modern psychology, seeks to awaken in man his inner creative potential for higher levels of consciousness, response, and appreciation of life. One very recent and distinctive spiritual psychology, known as the Course in Miracles, which endeavors to express Jesus' teaching in the Gospels in the form of a practical spiritual discipline of the mind, is a particularly good and striking example of a growing emphasis in the West on the illusory ego as the culprit in misleading man as to his true nature and relation to his creative source. The Course in Miracles interprets Jesus' teaching as the light which shows up the illusions of the ego, the origin of all evil, and man's essential, perfect sonship in relation to God. In this new spiritual psychology particularly, as well in the other systems mentioned previously, a close approach is made to Swedenborg's teaching on man's state of proprium, which covers over his heavenly or divine internal. However, some have tended to swing the pendulum so far as to be in danger of neglecting the albeit lower reality of man's selfish ego, and losing the balance that Swedenborg was careful to maintain between the angelic internal and the fallen external or proprium. And now to sum up, Swedenborg's teachings on the illusory proprium or ego and the as-if of the experience of our life as our own provide a most valuable clarification in a truly Christian context of the best of Eastern spiritual psychology. They give a clear terminology and insight into how to avoid the grave error of identifying oneself with God, and they provide a clear raison d'etre for the existence of such a misleading and yet vital experiential element as the ego, which satisfies the modern rational mind's need to know why has God arranged things in this apparently strange way. Finally, I would make the point that spiritual psychology would do well to return to Swedenborg's well-balanced teaching on the ego and the angelic internal, a very fine balance that is easily lost to man's spiritual detriment. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stanley.
Any time for questions?
I'm afraid not. Thank you for that beautifully modulated presentation. I'm afraid there are no time for questions. I do not regret that in a sense, because I would not wanted to have missed a word of that presentation. There will be opportunity for questions during the intermission after the next speaker. You can catch Dr. Stanley over a cup of coffee, or there may be time at the end of the program to revert to this.